Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the sunny city of Los Angeles, California. Getting ready for a playoff game. Cowboys come to town this weekend. Take on the Rams. Chargers, of course, traveling cross-country. Take on the Patriots. And it's interesting. I do think a little bit of what we saw last night, we may see in New England this weekend. We'll get to that coming up. Look, one of my favorite references, John Ramos, who, can we start the show properly? Congratulations to John Ramos, huh? Last night announced via Facebook, which is, that's public information, basically.
Yeah, it's really too public, actually.
Maybe you shouldn't have put it on Facebook. John Ramos got one past the goalie.
That's right. I shot and they scored.
Whoa. Little TMI, okay? I thought it was a stork thing. But John Ramos's lovely wife, Suzanne, is due. When is she due?
In July of this year.
In July to give birth to their third child. Congratulations to John Ramos.
Catching up with you, Doug.
Good. You go from man to zone, 2 to 3. Way to go there. Way to go there, Johnny boy.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah, be miserable like the rest of us. There you go. Anyway, Ramos is a huge cinephile. He's a big movie buff. He uses his Fox Sports connections to get to go to all the premieres, and then he interviews random people, and we have that. I'm kidding. He does a great job. Look, one of my favorite movies is Multiplicity. Multiplicity. Do you remember the Michael Keaton movie Multiplicity? The Michael Keaton movie Multiplicity basically is there's a guy, and kind of like most guys, he just doesn't have any time. He doesn't have any time to play golf, to go out with the dudes, to even sometimes be a dad. He's just like working, and he feels like he's missing life. And so there's a company that can splice his genes and create a copy, a genetic copy of him. Things go awry, though, when there's a copy of a copy. Right? And this, of course, if you remember back when you were a kid and we had these things called VHS tapes. Do you guys remember VHS tapes? And I'm not even going to start on Betamax. Okay? You have VHS tapes. Those are the cassette tapes that we used to record things on. My dad got the first ever camcorder. There's all kinds of shots playing all sports. But VHS tapes, you could splice them. You could copy them. A buddy could buy a movie and you could have the two VHS tapes, one tapes the other one. And occasionally you would have an issue with something called tracking. Do you guys remember tracking? Tracking! Somebody fix the tracking! Tracking problems were, all of a sudden there'd be like a white line that would somehow appear in the screen, and there was some knob that no one really knew how it worked, but it would just turn. And then there was auto-tracking, and boom, it was fixed. The problem with the tracking issues was when you did a copy of that copy, now the tape sucked. And if you've ever lived overseas, I have, the bootleg cassette tapes you would get of Friday or Friday After Next in the early 2000s were a copy of a copy. Not only were they not in English, but you couldn't usually see them and it would cut out some of the best scenes and some of the best lines. It feels like Alabama last night was a copy of a copy. Sure, they looked finally like Alabama had Tua at quarterback, meaning you got a legit pro prospect at quarterback, something they haven't really had. Have they had quarterbacks that have played in the National Football League? Yes, but have they had a dude at quarterback? Like, that was the difference this year. Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, three programs that usually have the most dudes, or three of the programs that have the most dudes in college football, finally have a quarterback. But the problem was between the defense, some of the offense, the running backs, the coordinators themselves, you had copies of a copy. Like, Mike Locksley didn't suddenly become a genius because he went to Alabama. This is the same guy who was 2-26 as a head coach at New Mexico. Now, he got the job at Maryland because of his relationships in the area and because he was offensive coordinator for the most dominant or second most dominant offense in college football. But he's a copy of a copy. And they ran up against the real thing. They ran up against a first-run DVD, direct, you know, skip cinema movie right to your home, and they got tracking issues. Clemson was the better team. Saban knew they were the better team. That's why they went for it and ran fake field goals and tried a bunch of other stuff that they normally wouldn't. You know why? Because normally, 95% of the time, they got better players than the other team. And that wasn't the case last night. Let's get you to Steve DeSager. We got breaking news in the National Football League. Steve, what do you got?
Breaking news from Fox Sports.
Well, per sources from Peter Schrager, Cliff Kingsbury is finalizing a deal to become the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. He was with USC about that long. He had met with Jets ownership last evening, then flew to Arizona early this morning, was meeting with the Cardinals today. NFL Network and Fox's Peter Schrager. Yeah, Kingsbury to the Cardinals. That was quick.
Wow. Wow. That USC is officially a dumpster fire. This is one of those deals where I like the hire. Like, look, you're going to win in Arizona if you can figure out the Josh Rosen thing. And that guy can coach some offensive ball. I mean, you kind of go through like, man, and he played in the NFL, and he's young enough and relatable enough and will challenge Josh Rosen. And obviously, can they put a defense? Can he lead men? I've told you before that, and this actually goes hand in hand with last night. You're going to get NFL guys say, how can a guy who couldn't win enough in college to keep his job become an NFL head coach? Because in coaching in the NFL, it's about coaching ball. Last night, Alabama was about equal or maybe slightly less, but let's just say they're equal to Clemson. Let's just say they're equal. That was a coaching mismatch. A game coaching mismatch. And Saban would tell you as much. Do you know why? Because that's not what Nick Saban does. Somebody does. Nick Saban's a really good defensive coordinator, a really good coach who hires really good people and challenges them constantly to be better. That's what he does. He's a great recruiter. He's a great leader. He is incredibly organized. Incredibly. But let's not act like in-game there's been anything special about Alabama's game plans on the offensive side of the football. Remember, he fought the tide of the trendy tempo offenses for years, even said they were dangerous to college football players. Last night, when you're playing against like talent, you actually have to be a good game coach. You have to prepare in a short period of time. And Clemson looked like they had prepared. Now, part of Clemson preparing was probably Clemson doing what you're supposed to do in college, and I didn't do. My wife used to do this, right? Where you keep up with the syllabus, you do all the reading, you don't really have to cram before finals. Whereas Alabama, they tried to cram. But even if you ask Nick Saban, when Nick Saban, this is a true story from somebody I know who I trust. So it's secondhand information. I'm not telling you I was there, but secondhand information was this. When he got the job at Alabama, when he took the job at Alabama, he's the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. How many times do I have to say this? I'm not going to be the head coach at Alabama. Remember that? And he took the job at Alabama, and he was flying to go on his first recruiting visits, and he's on the Alabama team plane, and the Alabama president was with him, and he said, we just got the best coach in America. You know what Nick Saban said? No, you didn't. You got the best recruiter in America. Nick Saban may appear to you as being super arrogant. I actually think he is the brightest sort of leader that there is. He has and has had the biggest staff in college football. He has found some of the brightest young assistants in college football. because he knows enough to know what he doesn't know. And he hires those people to do it. And his staff wasn't that good this year. And Nick Saban, you know, like he's going to sit there and solve the offensive riddles in game. Sure, they got outplayed. They also got outcoached. Whereas the reason Cliff Kingsbury didn't survive and succeed at Texas Tech. Like, look, part of it is that entire league is wired for offense. So while if he would have run the same offense and the same style in the Big Ten, maybe they set everybody's hair on fire. Or in the SEC, same thing. But in the Big 12, you can score 60, so what? We can score 70. Coaching in college football is about only a quarter is actually about the coaching. 75% of it is about recruiting, managing boosters, managing a program, managing your assistants, your trainers, academics, all of that other stuff. In the NFL, can you coach ball? And then can you hire people to coach the things that you don't coach? You can sit here and tell me, well, Cliff Kingsbury didn't succeed in the Big 12, and he might not succeed at Arizona. He might not. I mean, they might be a mess. They hired a guy, and, I mean, 11 months later, they fired a guy. But the Green Bay Packers just hired a head coach who's never been a head coach and was offensive coordinator for the 29th-ranked offense in the league. Right? Like, what were your options? It's a completely different profession, coaching in the pros and coaching in college. The pros is about ball and about leading men. College is about everything except ball. But then last night, it did become about coaching football. And Saban, the truth about Saban was exposed. The truth about Saban is exposed. And that's okay. Saban knows that. He's not an idiot. You don't be that successful and not know your weaknesses. You haven't self-scouted. I mean, look, I've said the same thing. Roy Williams' camp doesn't like me. They don't. They don't like me. They've never wanted me to call games, be around the program. And I've said, like, look, he is a Hall of Fame coach that won, I believe, a higher percentage of games than anybody and won a couple national titles. You know what he's not? He's not a great in-game X and O coach. Dean Smith wasn't. They'd sub their way out of leads. But they run an incredible program. And they teach kids how to play basketball so the kids can kind of figure it out on their own. And he has a good staff. And they kind of figure some stuff out. But if it comes down to X, E, and O, and one play here, one play there, he didn't know Bill Self was in a triangle and two a couple years ago. Villanova ran a play at the end of the game to win a national championship that they had run like 9 times during the season. And look, he smartly put his best shot blocker under the hoop to protect the rim, but who do you think was guarding Chris Jenkins? This is not a shot at Roy Williams. It's just to be a great college coach, sometimes you don't have to actually be a great X and O coach. And occasionally when you do, this happens. You get beat. When you're used to having better players 95% of the time, that other 5% of the time, things change. And if you don't have the help on your staff to fix things on the fly, you get embarrassed.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Matt LaFleur, which sounds like a hockey goalie's name more than a head coach of the Green Bay Packers, right? Matt LaFleur is the new head coach of the Green Bay Packers. And if you're just joining us, Cliff Kingsbury is going to be the new head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Both of these hires are going to make NFL people spin on their heads. I can't Matt LaFleur? Now, Matt LaFleur is young dude, former quarterback. My favorite part of my research in discovering Matt LaFleur was he was once the quarterback of the Omaha Beef. I love that. Matt LaFleur, quarterback for the Omaha Beef. You too can like beef for dinner if you just go order Omaha steaks, right? Like, that's the easiest sale ever. Beef. What's the guy who was the quarterback of Kentucky? Jared Lorenzen. How is Jared Lorenzen not the quarterback of the Omaha Beef? That's the easiest sale ever. Listen, I know he can't move and he's 300 pounds and he's fighting diabetes because he's had this terrible weight gain problem. And of course, he's come out and talked about all the issues he's had. But I mean, look at him. If that's not the quarterback for the Omaha Beef, I don't know what is. Anyway, I love the idea that this is a lot like whether it's Kirk Cousins or anybody who's signed off the free agent market. Signed off the free agent market. What happens immediately after they're hired is the pushback of, I can't believe you hired Matt LaFleur. He was coordinator for the Tennessee Titans, and their offense was ranked between 28th and 32nd in everything they did. Should be pointed out that no one knows if Marcus Mariota is any good. Should also be pointed out that team is built to run the football. And oh yeah, by the way, Mariota was hurt part of the year, and they were one game away from making the playoffs. And while being an understudy to Kyle Shanahan and understudy to Sean McVay doesn't automatically grant you an interview or head coaching status, let's also point out that Frank Reich has done a magnificent job. Has he done a great job? Anybody with the Colts? Done a great job. He doesn't coach defense, and he didn't call plays last year with the Philadelphia Eagles. Right? And by the way, the Philadelphia Eagles, their head coach. You familiar with his story? Former backup quarterback to Brett Favre and the Green Bay Packers. Comes over to the Eagles from the Kansas City Chiefs. You know what he didn't do with the Kansas City Chiefs? That's right. Didn't call plays. Matt Nagy could have been the coach, and I don't know if this has been reported. Okay, Chris Ballard's the GM of the Indianapolis Colts, right? Matt Nagy was actually the first choice of Chris Ballard because they worked together in Kansas City, and their sons were on the same AAU team, and they are best friends. They are very close friends. Matt Nagy chose the Chicago Bears instead. One reason was he didn't know about Andrew Luck, and he felt great about. They all like Mitch Trubisky when they evaluated him coming out of college. So he took the job. But you know what Matt Nagy didn't do in Kansas City? Didn't call plays. So this idea that you're like, well, you have to have had some sort of success as a head coach. If you had success as a head coach, you'd probably be, wait for it, a head coach in the NFL. Right? And the only guy who's been a success as a head coach who's out there, or two guys maybe who's out there on the market, one is Jim Caldwell, was fine. You know, he was fine with Detroit. Fine. He was fine with Indy, but everyone in Indy gives credit more to, you know, the sheriff who was the quarterback. Jim Caldwell is utterly unoffensive, but not exactly inspiring. And Mike McCarthy somehow wore out his welcome in Green Bay and couldn't get along with Aaron Rodgers, and their offense was seen as dull and lame and stagnant. Right? So, look, the league is about offense. Like, well, all these guys looking for, yeah, because offense has determined the entire league.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
One of the great stories in the NFL. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Starting running back for the Denver Broncos, he only started 8 games, and he's the first undrafted rookie in league history to get selected to a Pro Bowl, and he didn't even get to play the last game of the season because of wrist injury. Obviously, won't play in the Pro Bowl because of it. Philip Lindsay is our guest, joining us on behalf of Vizio AMD, the TVP Award. Philip, look, this has been a crazy journey for you, playing at CU. Anybody who watches the Pac-12 knows you had that juice in the tank, juice in your legs. Take me back to draft night, okay? Did you know you were going undrafted?
You know, I didn't know. I thought I was going to at least, you know, go five through seven. You know, I felt that I was talented enough and I've put enough film on there and I had a great pro day to be able to have the opportunity to hear my name called, you know, and unfortunately it didn't. You know, for whatever reason, they felt that some other running backs were the other what, how many other running backs got, 32 other running backs got drafted or something like
yes.
that, were
yes.
better than me. So, you know, and, you know, at the end of the day, shame on them. But it is what it is.
Yeah, it's interesting because, and I talked to some other teams with their undrafted players. And like, look, people think that we hit because we got an undrafted player, but the fact is we had seven chances. So even the Broncos, who signed you as an undrafted free agent, they had a chance to draft you and did not. Yeah, what was that?
They had,
what
ten was, chances? They had 10 picks? I think
yeah, 10.
About 10 picks, yeah.
So what's that like to walk into their offices when they want to sign you? And you're like, look, you had 10 shots to draft me and you didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was angry. And I almost didn't go to Denver. Just the fact that, you know, you have 10 spots. You drafted two running backs. And, you know, and you want me to come sign for free agent. You know, it just didn't sit well, you know. And it's not just them, you know. It's not just the Denver Broncos. It was all of them. You know, it's all 32 teams that did it. You know what I mean? If it wasn't for my mother, though, I probably wouldn't have stayed in Denver.
What'd she say?
I would have went somewhere else. And
okay, so what exactly did your mom say?
She just felt that it was the best situation for me. Honestly, at that point, it was chaotic. I only had 15 minutes to decide where I was going to go. My whole family's in there arguing and stuff, trying to see what the best fit for me. And I'm sitting here like, dang, I never really left the state. So this will be probably the first time I ever left the state. And on top of that, I'm not drafted. So I'm going out there with no money, nothing, and just hope that I can make the team. You know, it got quiet, and then my mother kind of, you know, she's a quiet woman, but when she usually says something, it's usually right. And, you know, everybody got quiet, and she kind of just said out of nowhere that I need to stay home, and she felt that it was the right thing for me to do, and something good would come out of it. You know, and at that time, I was mad, but I didn't let me being angry make the decision for me, and I decided to stay home.
How similar is that? For people who don't know Phillip's story, you're a star at South High School in Denver, and your senior year, you had a bad knee injury, right? It wasn't just your ACL, it was other parts of your knee, wasn't it?
Yeah, blew my whole knee out.
And you were supposed to go to Tech, weren't you? And then you end up, how similar was that? Was the decision to stay home to not go to Tech?
So I had Texas A&M, and then I had Utah. They all put they took their offers off the table. I was verbally committed to Colorado at the time, and I didn't know what was going to happen now because, you know, Coach Embry at the time got fired. The day he came to my house, he got fired, actually. And I didn't know where I was going to go. Coach Mike McIntyre honored my scholarship, and that's where I decided to go and stay. And, you know, it was a journey, you know, because when I got to the place, my knee was so bad, they didn't even think I was going to be able to play football again. And I was only 150. I was about 150 pounds, 155 pounds, man. And so, but I worked my butt off, and, you know, and I kept my faith high. And that's the one thing nobody can ever take is your faith. And I believed in myself. And now I'm looking back at it, and it's a great story to be able to tell kids. And kids that are going through this, it's something that they can look back at and say they can do too, because anything's possible.
Okay, take me back to that. You're 150 pounds. You're coming off a devastating knee injury. You show up at CU, and you gotta prove to them first you can actually play football, let alone become first a kick returner and then a running back. What was the process building your body?
It took time. You know what I mean? It took time, a lot of hard work, a lot of patience, and just going out there and working on my craft. That's what I really, you know, I knew I wasn't going to be the biggest person, but I wanted to get as strong as I could, you know what I mean, as fast as I could. And that was my biggest goal. And then, you know, it never failed. It seemed like every place I stepped into, I always looked at the depth chart, and I was always on the very bottom of it. So you always get motivation, you know, and you get tired of having to feel like you always got to fight to the top. But that's what makes it a great story, because that's what keeps you going. It's when you got to fight to get to the top of somewhere.
Phillip Lindsay joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. So now you fast forward, you show up at Broncos camp. How many running backs were on the roster?
Was there five? It was Royce Freeman, Devontae Booker, D'Angelo Henderson, and David Williams. Yeah. So about five of us all together.
When did you know you had it?
every day I went out there and I was making plays. You know, I was being consistent. I was I proved that I could run inside just as I could run outside, because for some reason people didn't think I could run inside, and that's all I've ever done in my, you know, my career was run inside. And then as a running back, if you can't run inside, you're not gonna be able to last in the NFL.
It's also is it fair to say, like, it's not just running in, everybody points out you got to run inside, but you also look, you want to make the team, you got to play special teams, both offense and defense.
Oh,
you
got to sure.
be able, you got to pass and protect. You got to do all the little things. Everybody, I think most kids think, hey, to make it to the NFL, I got to be able to run for 2,000 yards. Like, yeah, actually, you got to be able to block.
No,
you got to be able to tackle.
That's nowhere near. For all these people that think you have to rush for all kind of yards, that's not what it's about. It's about what you can do to make the team a better team, to win football games. You got to be able to catch just as good as you're able to run. You have to be able to block. You have to be able to play special teams. You know, I mean, you have to be able to make tackles. You got to be an asset to the team. And for kids coming up, they need to understand that. They have to understand that you have to be able to play many different roles. When you're on the field as a special team player, when you're on the field as a gunner, you're a gunner. You're not a running back. When you're on the special team and you're playing kick return, you're a kick returner. You're not a running back. You got to be able to change your roles at any time. And that's what it's about being an athlete, and that's what it is to make it in the NFL. You got to be able to find roles for yourself. And that's how you stay there longer.
When you walked in, what was it, week 8, right, was your first start? What's that like, considering the journey, the knee injury, the lack of a true scholarship, to make it to undrafted, to fifth on the depth chart, to being the starting running back of the Broncos? What was that like?
Yeah, it was exciting. You know, it was something that was like, dang, you know, I came from just trying to make the team to get ready to be my first start NFL career game, you know, and it was against the Kansas City Chiefs, and it was an away game. And I kind of knew, you know, nobody had to tell me I was going to be the starter, because I kind of knew going into the game, I was going to probably start the game off. And so I knew that I needed to make an impact in there. And that's all I thought about, was just be myself, just play football. You know, and it really didn't hit in until that next week when we would play the home game. It was against the Houston Texans, and I got to hear my name get called out the tunnel. And then that's when I knew it was real. It was a surreal moment to be able to be there, run out the tunnel, and just the whole entire stadium just get loud. And it just showed that, dang, these fans really do care about me. You know, they really do, you know, like me a lot. You look in the stands, you got little kids wearing afros, and you see number 30 all around the stadium. And it just made you come to reality, dang, you know, you're living your childhood dream.
By the way, you mentioned number 30. You started the year wearing number 2. Right, I mean, like people, you had to make the jersey change. There's a bunch of kind of moments where these are like big moments. Like, oh wait, I gotta change numbers to a running back number, didn't you?
Exactly. You know, you feel like once you go in there, you're number 2. Like that's pretty much like saying, you know, you're just here to be a body. You know what I mean? And so you're just wearing a single digit number, while everybody else got a double digit number. They're drafted, you know. So if for them it's like I'm here. For me it's like I'm the outside looking in. You know, I still got to go out here and prove it. This is only a tryout. That's pretty much what it is. And you got to make the best of your opportunities.
Philip Lindsay joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Obviously, you hurt your wrist, so you can't play in the Pro Bowl. But it's not that you don't want to. What of all the things? What does it mean to be the first undrafted rookie to be a Pro Bowler?
It means a lot, man. You know, I haven't really got a chance to really sit down and think about it. And actually, I want to give a shout-out to the Denver Bronco fans. I want to give a shout-out to my agency, and I want to give a shout-out to the organization, because they pressed the issue of me not going to the Pro Bowl. A lot of fans started doing GoFundMe apps. But because NFL seen that, they carved a role out for me to be a social media correspondent. So I'll be out there in Florida, in Orlando, talking to all the players and being a part of the Pro Bowl, being able to get Pro Bowl experience, all because of the fans, the organization, and my agency coming together, and NFL seeing that and made it happen. So I want to, you know, thank the fans for that.
Philip Lindsay joining us on behalf of Vizio. He's a candidate for the True Value Performance Award. That's the TVP. Go to Vizio.com/TVP until January 20th. You can select this year's award winner. It's probably going to be pretty hard to top. You, undrafted rookie, becomes, you know, you led the league in yards per carry. Like, I'd love to have you make a case for somebody to vote for you, but I can't think of any. Is there anything else that can help make the case?
I mean, no. I mean, honestly, you know, this is a good, beautiful part about it, and this is for everybody that's my competition that's going against is. It's a fans vote, you know, and fans don't lie, you know. And at the end of the day, fans are going to vote for who they feel was the best for this award. And you know, last year Alvin Kamara won it, and so how about having another running back win it this year? And it's a fun and great experience to see what the fans think at the end of it. So, you know, fans vote, and the best thing about this for the fans are, you know, once you vote, you know, you have an opportunity and a chance to win a 70-inch TV. You know, you can't beat that. So, you know, hopefully everybody does go out there and vote.
Last thing, I know you got to run. So oftentimes you've used this, all the different things as motivation, right? Between the injury and the scholarship and being fifth on the depth chart and undrafted free agent. Now that everybody said how great you are, how do you stay motivated this offseason?
For me, you never can get comfortable. You have to understand, the NFL stands for not for long. Every time they draft somebody, every time someone comes in, they're trying to draft somebody to replace you. And for me, it's about the long term. It's not about 1 year. 1 year, anybody can do 1 year. It's about being consistent. Can I do it for 3, 4, 5 years? That's when you know that you became a good running back. And I don't want to just become a good running back. I want to be a great running back. I want to be able to hold the rushing title. You know, Elliott has held it for how many years now? You know, and I want to be the one to take the belt. But, you know, let's be honest. And I feel like I need to go out there and I need to prove myself again. Every year you got to prove yourself that you belong in this league. Because all it takes is one slip up and everybody thinks that you're done. So you need to just continue to go, and you can't be comfortable. You can't be satisfied, and I know I'm never satisfied.
Hey, man, congratulations. This has been an amazing ride to watch you on. We hope to watch it. We'll watch you continue next year for the Denver Broncos, and we appreciate you joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
All right, man. Thank you guys for having me. It's an honor to be able to talk to you, man.
Even better for us. What an incredible, incredible story.